to know this series, we're going to deal with the subject of the creation of the world. So, we know that the Rambam, in his Guide for the Perplexed, he was very deeply aware and understood every aspect of the Torah, probably more than any great genius in Jewish tradition from the time of the Amoraim, the Gemara, probably the greatest mind. At the same time, he was also able to have an understanding of other theories which did not fit in with the Torah. And he knew all the sciences and the philosophical positions of his day, which he did not deal with in his magnum opus, in the Mishneh Torah, in the Yad HaChazakah, which was written in Hebrew, and was intended to be a comprehensive crystallization of both the teachings of the written Torah and the oral tradition. But since in his day there were many Jews who were also great scientists and philosophers, and they were used to translate all the Latin works into Arabic, at the time when there was a great flowering of intellectualism in the Muslim world, even more than the Christian world. And the main great minds of mankind at that time, in much larger proportion than non-Jews, were the Jews, like also today, and the sciences. And many of them, they were greater experts in the sciences and philosophers of the Gentiles than our own Torah. So in order to clarify the truth to them, he wrote the Guide for the Perplexed, Morei Nebuchim. He wrote in Arabic, purposely. And there, the first part of his work is the disproof of the Aristotelian theory of eternity, which also became the basis for the later development in the scientific world to reject it. Newton rejected it. Many of them went back, in fact, to the Guide for the Perplexed, and many of the great non-Jewish philosophers, they recognized we have to explain that the world began from what's called today singularity, from energy. And the concept of energy is referred to, it says, Platonic variation of the eternity of a Heilig material. Now, we'll discuss this. The Heilig material is also referred to by the Ramban, who wrote the deepest medieval commentary on the Chumash. And he says that the word Tohu, mentioned at the beginning of the Chumash, says Ha'aretz Hayta Tohu Vavohu. So he says, this is the Heilig material referred to by Plato. So Plato, in contrast to Aristotle, did not believe in the eternity of matter, but he did believe in the eternity of energy. Today we will call Heilig material power of energy. And when it says Haaretz Hayta Tohu Vavohu, because the Chumash, the Rabban says, Tohu means energy, because it's not say, it says, So the earth creation by Hashem at the beginning, it was a creation of Hashem, and we have to understand the creation of time and space. And the first pasuk speaks as a general heading about the totality of creation of the universe. But then, grammatically speaking, it doesn't say Vayhi Haaretz, it's Vayirish Hayta, which is called the pluperfect. The earth had been in a state of energy. So the Ramban identifies the energy with the word Tohu. It doesn't say that Bereshit Bara Elokim Tohu. It says Bereshit Bara Elokim Eta Shemayim V'Haaretz, which is an overall description of the whole universe. As we'll soon see, Bereshit is the creation of time. Hashemayim is the creation of the huge universe. V'Haaretz is the creation of this globe. And then the Chumash continues without describing the whole universe, but it says once time was created, so the Chumash begins to speak about the 6 days of creation. It says there was a state when the earth was just energy, nothing, form of energy, which Plato assumed the eternity of this energy. But the Chumash, and the Ramban, and the Rambam, all Jewish thinkers, they say no. Heilig material was also created, as it implies from the Chumash. The earth was in a state of energy. Then the Kant-Laplace evolution nebula hypothesis is the hypothesis that there were explosions which came much later. Kant Laplace, that was 200 years ago, which was then developed in the evolutionary concept. In other words, that we have to understand their concept is that there were different powers of gas that produced explosions. And the explosions of energies, some also have the idea was also large blocks of some form of material, and these explosions brought about the development of planets, the development of the earth, the globe of the earth, and also then the development within the earth. Kant Laplace, they dealt more with the astronomical changes, and then we know that Darwin, Huxley and others, they said this evolved gradually. Perhaps on this I'll tell an episode, two episodes, which have to do indirectly with the words that I use here. One episode is in time of Maimonides, as it was known by the non-Jewish world, as the greatest thinker amongst the Jews. So there were some agnostics and atheists who came to argue with him. And he knew they were coming. So when they came, he showed them beautiful illuminated calligraphic manuscript of words of wisdom with fantastic also poetic description and language. And he showed them this manuscript as they used to do in the Middle Ages. You know, you see them in museums. And they said, well, you know, who wrote this? So he said, well, what happened was, you see, I have a desk here with inks of many different colors and a blank piece of parchment. But a storm came through the window and blew down all these inkwells onto the parchment. And behold, this was produced. So they said to him, we thought you were a great thinker. Now you're telling us a fable, a story. No, how can this happen? It's impossible that there should have been some form of huge storm which should produce this fantastic document with so beautiful calligraphy, writing, so many different colors illuminated, and such words of wisdom, and such a poetic description. Impossible. So he said, well, I want to tell you that this world in which we live, where we see so many fantastic things going on, beautiful sunsets, beautiful trees, beautiful flowers, and all the different birds of different kinds. And you think this comes by itself? Can't happen. That was his argument. Now I'll tell you a modern version, which has to do with the Cantor Plus Nebula hypothesis, which says that also there were different explosions took place and produced this world. And there was, like happens today, in fact, frequently, the great scientists, nearly all of them, they can only explain the universe as being a product of the invisible creator, whatever language they use. But that's what they mean. What it comes to. They say that science, today of course, has produced the fact that the world began from a singularity. And they say, produced different energies. And they're trying to find the great universal principle that produces all these energies. Some of them even use the words science is the attempt to understand the mind of God. Einstein said that I see God in the fantastic harmony of the universe, and science is progressing constantly to find more and more harmony. So this shows us a divine designer. It's some of the popularizers, some of the bishops, priests, and unfortunately also rabbis, they think that if they will deny the existence of an absolute creator, they're not being true to science, but they don't know science enough. Because the scientists accept it today, nearly all of them, whatever language they use. The greater scientists. So this professor of science, he produced a work where he said science proves the existence of God. So others came and said, who says? Constant debate today amongst American, let's call them school teachers of science. And even here in Israel, the head of the science teaching department of the Ministry of Education, Hershkovitz, he was the head, because he's one of the greatest scientists, appointed a minister or something. And because he said, we have to introduce into all school curriculums of science also the concept of the divine designer. Not only just say that we explain the world according to evolution. I mean, the concept of evolution of Huxley and Darwin has become out of date entirely, but still they still want to say, we can't put forward design. So he was dismissed from his job here in Israel. So here in Israel, unfortunately, the bias also exists. Anyway, this professor was a great professor. So some people came and wanted to argue with him. So he went into his laboratory, and he showed them in his laboratory, he had a fantastic globe of the earth, which showed all the contours, the hills, and the rivers, and the oceans, in a fantastic manner. You know, somebody see an atlas, which is quite nice, you see even the globes that they produced, they showed in a small way, but here it was shown in such an exact fashion. And so they all came. They came, others, to argue with him. And they say, well, you know, we've seen many globes. We've never seen a globe which really shows all these contours and what this globe of Earth really looks like when you would look at it from a scientific angle and see it. It's so fantastic. So, who made it? Who made it? He said, well, you see, here's my laboratory, and here are Bunsen burners. You know, they make experiments, you have burners, gas burners. Of course, I have a rule here. I don't permit anyone to come in here with a match or with a lighted cigarette. It's very dangerous. Well, it happened to some of the gas burners, the gas was on, and somebody came with a cigarette and left it here. There's a huge explosion, and this globe was produced. So he says, this is, so they were said, no, we don't really believe it. Don't tell us such stories. Can't happen like that. Well, this is exactly the Kantler-Plus nebula hypothesis. That's what it is. That's how they describe it. Explosion. Anyway. Now, then I'll say today, apart from the pulsification theory, I won't go to that now, it's in no science, but the camp is divided into supporters of the steady state theory of continuous creation, that's Hoyle, and the Big Bang supposition that the universe began with initial state of high density and expands with decrease in density, that's Ryle. Both, all these theories are already foreshadowed amongst the Greek scientists. Greek scientists, there were some who believed in evolution. Some believed also in continuous creation. There were all different theories. The truth is today, it's advanced a bit, that nearly all of them, foremost scientists, they agree with the Big Bang theory. That means with the singularity, which then produced various forms of energy. So, I have to add this here. Any comments so far? I want your comments in this because I've been asked to reproduce this book with a more advanced level. Does anyone have a pen or pencil handy?
Yeah, there's a pen.
Thank you very much. And any questions, please?
I remember that Professor Levy.
Yes.
Once remarked that Hashem created four worlds before this one. And that's why science agrees with the Torah that the dinosaurs are millions of years old. The world is, 6,000 years old. So how can you correlate the two? So there must have been forms of life, maybe in different worlds before. We're here on the globe, and then due to floods and explosions, these creatures became extinct. And that's why you can answer the question that the Earth is more than, time is more than, when the Earth is more than 6,000 years. Is that
correct? Yeah. Certainly. I actually author of the articles that deal with the age of the world. That's it. We'll come to perhaps a bit later. So, I'd like to combine these introductory remarks now with an essay from Rav Dessler. It deals also with the creation of the world. Connection with understanding time. Are you using it now?
I can see if I can get another one.
No, don't you take it. So, now these essays have also been translated to English by Rav Kamen. You've got quite a few. If you look in the library, you'll find both. I didn't bring the right volume. Strive for Truth, Part 3. Strive for Truth, Part 3. You'll find this essay in the paraphrase of Rav Kalman's book, Strive for Truth, on Parshat Bereshit. What I'd like to do it with you, from the original Hebrew, with comments. So one of the questions which has come is the eternity of the world, as opposed to the concept of the Chumash, which says the world was created. And whatever way we interpret the 6 days of creation and the thousands of years that have followed since the birth of Adam, and I just mentioned by the side, which we'll go into more thoroughly later, I'll just say briefly that the way to understand the words of the Chumash, there's the simple meaning, straightforward meaning, which we teach children. But all the commentators agree that there are much deeper aspects to each word of the description of creation. And one of the points which is connected with what you mentioned before, which you heard from Professor Levy, is as follows. The first verse, Bereishit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz, even Rashi says, this also comes a simple meaning, that the first verse is an overall introduction and describes how we've got to understand the beginning of the world. And how understanding the word in expression of Elohim gives us an understanding of the world. Now the name Elohim, the same letters are used also for Elohim. A name for Elohim, Achirim. It can sometimes be Kodesh and sometimes be Chol. And certainly when it says here, Bara Elohim, it's Kodesh, it's holy. Now how can we understand that the name is used, the same name, unlike the other names of Hashem, the same name is used both for holy and profane, and even the worst profanity, which is strange gods. The Seres HaDibra says you shouldn't have Elohim Achirim Alpanai. The explanation which is generally given is that if you go to the root of the words, then you can understand it. But the word Aleph Lamed, similarly also is sometimes used for power, or for anything that possesses great power. It's also used for strange gods, also used for God himself. So when we look at the world around us, we see there are many forces. So you can say like this, forces express themselves in a concrete manner. So when we have the word Elohim Achirim, it's seeing the different forces which exist in the world of nature, and there are many different forces. And all these different forces, they exist, and we see them, and we're impressed by them. But if we just ask the question, what are these forces? So then we analyze them through the microscope or through the telescope. We find out more about the forces. Because when we see planets and stars, or when we see minerals, or we see vegetables or animals, we realize that all these beings are being held up by forces. That they're not just physical, they've got a force behind them that keeps them going. That keeps some of them moving. Even we see them moving. There's a force that moves them. If you go more, there's a force that causes some of them to grow. These are all forces. So when it's used in the singular, like it is in the first verse of the Chumash, it teaches us that really they're all one force. And that's why, when you recognize it all one force, then it's Elohim, it's Kodesh. When you start thinking they're all different, then the whole world is really a place of different forces that some of them conflict one with the other. And you say everything is just happening, it's random. But if you recognize that there's one force behind it, as the Torah describes, as described throughout the Bible, there's one force behind them all. When you say, Kagadol Hashem Al Kol HaElohim, what Yitro said, I know now, Hashem is greater than all the different forces. He's above them. We call him Elokei or Elohim. He is the God, one God, of all the different forces. There's unity in the universe. And really, this is something which is accepted by all greatest scientists. They recognize the world is a unity. Some of them say, well, perhaps we can't see the unity directly, but we know it's there. It's the only way. Because more and more we discover things, the more we see there's unity. It's the unity of the different forces that produces the awareness of Hashem. This is described best in a Midrash, which says, in Yeshaya, Su'u marom enechem, lift up your eyes upon high, ura'u mi vara ele, and go and see who created these. So, with the telescope and the microscope, we can say, what are these? These are the phenomena of nature. We see them through telescope and microscope. But through telescope and microscope, you can't see Hashem, because Hashem is invisible. But if you ask the question, me, so Zohar and Midrash both say, me, and Eile makes up Elohim. When you start asking the question, who's behind? Lift your eyes a bit higher. Don't just look superficially. Go to the source and ask yourself the question, how did this come about? This is what's called today the cosmological and the teleological argument for the existence of a creator, existence of God the Creator. Cosmological, you can't explain the origin of everything.